Welcome to Comic Talk Today for Saturday, April 14th, 2018. This episode is a special episode of Top of the Pile, which I totally missed last week because I had no time to read anything. So I'm going to be going through quite a few books today, a couple from last week that made it to Top of the Pile, and then of course a few from this week. First, I want to thank everyone who listened to Thursday's episode with Zach and Lonnie. I had a ton of fun. Apparently, they did as well. And I want to thank everyone that listened. It might be, so far, the most popular episode of this podcast. So, thank you very much. Since you are maybe new to this podcast, I'm going to extend our giveaway for one last day. So, this will be the last episode I'll announce it. I will announce a winner on Monday. But, of course, we've been giving away a Ninjak vs. the Valiant Universe trading card game from... And so, all you need to do is leave a comment on this podcast, Twitter, most likely, at Geekvine. Let me know what you thought of the episodes. Of course, you can leave a review on iTunes or Google Play, Stitcher, any of those places to be entered. I will put all those names in a hat, and I will select one on Monday, and that game will be shipped out to you directly from the manufacturer. Don't miss out! It's free! I also want to plug an episode that Nick Wetmore and I just did for the Nerdy Legion podcast. You can find that at nerdylegion.com/episodes/N, as in Nigel, L as in Larry, -147, in which Nick talked about his C2E2 experience. And we did a little bit of follow-up to the 99 Cent Plague episode that I put out either last Tuesday or Wednesday about the 99 Cent Marvel sales. So check that out if you would, so you can get a little more in-depth commentary from the two of us. And then I had a comment from Ed regarding some of the things I said about Boom Studios. So Ed has been involved with Boom for a long time. He was doing the Boom Addiction podcast. And he wanted to send me a message to say that Boom has a returnability on 6 selected books a month, not specifically 1s and 2s. So I'm going to dive into that a little bit more from the information that I received privately. But that's a great point, Ed, so thanks for commenting on that as well. Now, without further ado, let's get into Top of the Pile. And first up on Top of the Pile, I'm going to talk about 2 books. The first one is going to be Isola number 1 from Image Comics. This is written by Brandon Fletcher and Carl Herschel. Excuse me. The art is Carl Herschel and Misasik. And the letters are Aditya Bidikar. And this is going to be a very short one because it was very enjoyable. But I got to say, there were next to no words in this whole issue. It was pretty much an entire issue of art, which is fine by me because I'm going to say that the art in this book is absolutely beautiful. It is definitely very much inspired by like Miyazaki movies, Japanese anime. But it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. The panel layouts are great. The coloring's fantastic. And the story, though, is a little odd. Partially because I don't really know what's happening in this book. Now, I know that when I did the comic predictor the week before, this was on my prediction list as a top of the book, top of the pile book. But I'm not quite sure if I can put it at the top of the pile. I just wanted to talk about it because I had very high expectations for the book, and I like Brandon Fletcher as a writer, but the fact that I don't quite know what the story is about put me off a little bit. Right now, the way that I read this book, all I can tell is that it follows Rook and Alwyn, and Rook is a soldier for Alwyn's kingdom, except for some reason, Alwyn has turned from the queen into this awesome-looking tiger. And I don't know why, it just kind of happens. There's a whole flashback scene that deals with that, but doesn't tell me anything about how this whole thing happened. And they're running through the woods trying to get to Isola, and it pretty much just deals with Rook trying to protect Alwyn from any danger that pops up. There's like a hunting clan, there's a witch that pops up at the end. But overall, a little confused on the story. So I can't rate this as highly as I would. I mean, the art is for sure a 5 out of 5. Story, maybe a 2.5 out of 5. So we'll just go somewhere in between, because the story, I feel, is going to be really important for this book in the future. I'm going to shoot a little bit lower and go for a 3 out of 5 for Izola, number 1, from Image Comics. And that's too bad. I really did have high hopes for this book. One that didn't disappoint, to me at least, was Analog, number 1, also from Image Comics. And this is Jerry Dugan, O'Sullivan on art, and Jordi Belair on colors, and Sabino on letters. And this is the book that's pretty much very, like, right up my alley. This deals with a very near future, sort of post-apocalyptic society in which computers and technology are very much frowned upon. And our main character, as we learn throughout the story, was somehow involved in this apocalypse of technology happening in the future. But currently, well, I guess not currently, in the future, he is a ledger man and he delivers paper secrets between people and corporations, because, of course, the internet has been totally hacked. It's been doxxed. And so it's not safe to send any secret information over the internet, because there are no secrets anymore. Everything is hackable. And the only thing that's not hackable is paper. Now, of course, the way that this comes out in the story itself is really interesting, because it kind of throws us back to an era before technology, where there are couriers traveling throughout the country delivering information. And our main character is paid very highly to deliver these secrets, but of course it's very dangerous. And as we learn, as the issue opens up, he's tried to deliver some of these secrets in a suitcase, and he tries to get mugged by this group in a park. Fortunately, he's always very much aware of what's going on, very much aware of his surroundings. He's an ex-NSA agent. And so he has a sniper up on a rooftop guarding him in case something happens. And he easily takes out the muggers and delivers the secrets that he's supposed to. There's some really cool flashback scenes to the pre-doxing era that this book takes place in. And we meet this guy named Oppenheimer, who, of course, if you're familiar with history, was the guy that cleared the nuclear bomb, changed the world in many, many ways. Oppenheimer in this book is not that guy, it's a different guy, but it's very much an analog to Mark Zuckerberg, I would say. And what I find really interesting is that, you know, when a comic is being written and created, it's done months and months, sometimes years ahead of time. And the fact that now all these stories that are kind of being played around in this comic book are very much real life. You know, this past week we had Mark Zuckerberg show up to Congress where he was grilled about privacy settings and dissemination of private information to the Cambridge Analytica from the public. It kind of hit a soft spot for me, because this is very much current events right now. And the Oppenheimer is in this book is, in some ways, I would say, different from Mark Zuckerberg in real life. Zuckerberg seems very aloof and unaware of what maybe he's doing wrong. Whether that's true or not, I'm not going to talk about on this podcast. But in this book, Oppenheimer is kind of the opposite. He does feel like his company and his technology are out to make a better world. But you can almost tell that maybe there's some kind of hidden motivation behind all this. Seeing those flashbacks in this book was pretty interesting, because now we understand why this world came about and how Oppenheimer and Jack kind of made this world happen. Because as it turns out, Jack kind of, it seems, will go against whatever Oppenheimer is trying to do. And that's what's going to cause the downfall of society. And there's a few other cool tidbits in here about, you know, how people feel about technology. There's a point where Jack is in a bar, and a guy walks in talking on his smartwatch, on a phone conversation on a smartwatch. And the bartender, like, brings out a shotgun pretty much. He's like, get that technology out of here. We don't want that stuff in here. So really cool, really well done. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm definitely going to be sticking out with Analog. Again, Analog number 1 from Image Comics. I'm going to give this 4 out of 5. Now onto this week's picks. I have 3 that I mentioned on top of the pile that I'm going to talk about, and 2 that somehow I completely missed until New Comic Book Day. And in fact, those 2 might be the best of what came out this week, for me at least. We'll kick off with Immortal Men number 1. This is from DC Comics. This is part of the New Age of Heroes line. It's written by James Tynion, art Jim Lee and Ryan Benjamin. Inks is Scott Williams and Richard Friend. Colors by Jeremiah Skipper and Alex Sinclair. Letters by Carlos Mangual. And I gotta say, I was extremely excited for this book. The premise seems really, really awesome. I love, like, weird, cosmic, mystical storylines. But this book didn't quite deliver for me. That was a little upsetting. I think part of the problem is, because this stuff is stemming out of the end of Metal, there's a lot about these characters that we don't know. A lot about this universe that we don't know. And I think Tynion had to bring in all the major players into this first issue, and it kind of ended up being a little messy, because I didn't feel like I really cared about anybody. And I think part of that is because there's so many mystical, magical elements that are being played around, so many different aspects of reality that are toyed with in this issue, it almost felt like I was reading a lot of gobbledygook in some way. Because there were a lot of words on the page, but none of them really meant much to me. So I wish there would have been a different direction into how the story was told. I have a feeling who I know one of the main motivations and drivers of the story will be, but couldn't quite get that feeling from this first issue. So because I couldn't really relate to people, the art was good. It's Jim Lee art. So of course, if you've been following Jim Lee for decades, you'll be very familiar with the art style. Because I couldn't really relate to characters, though, I've got to go a little bit lower on this one. I'm just going to give Immortal Man a 3 out of 5. It was good. I'm going to read the next issue. I'll probably stick around for a couple just to see exactly what is happening. But I do have high hopes for the series. There's some really great character designs in here. Some interesting play between different factions of this universe that I look forward to seeing how that turns out. Immortal Man number 1, again from DC Comics. 3 out of 5. Now, one that I was really excited about also is Domino number 1 from Marvel Comics. And I talked about it, I know for sure, on the Comic Predictor episode. I know that I talked about it with my co-host on the Nerd Legion, Nick Wetmore. This is Gail Simone and David Baldion doing art. And Jesus Abortov also. And this was a really fun read, I gotta say. I wasn't quite sure what to expect on a Domino book. And it was a ton of fun to read. The art is really fantastic. I love the art. The expressions on Domino's face are really telling and help drive the story quite a bit. And basically what happens is as we open up the issue, we see Domino with a dog. And then the rest of the issue tells us kind of how it is that Domino decides to get this dog and keep this dog. And so she goes on this mercenary mission, and that turns into her showing up at a birthday party, and there's all these mutants there. Dazzler shows up. She's the master of ceremonies. She's performing at the party. And so all that was cool. But I gotta say, this book is not really for me. I know there's definitely gonna be an audience for this. I'm gonna assume this will lean towards a very much younger comic reader audience. This will definitely do well, probably with a female readership, because there's a lot of strong female characters. But the issue that I had with this book is pretty much the same issue that I have when reading Harley Quinn over at DC Comics. There's just too much funny stuff happening. And now, I like a little bit of comedy in my comics, but not generally a whole lot. And I've always been like a huge fan of postmodern literature where like unseemingly related events kind of flow into one another, and that happens a lot in this first issue of Domino. But it didn't quite click for me, and that's too bad because I love Gail Simone. And I think what she does with the character is really interesting, it's really well done, but again, I don't feel like I'm the target audience for this book. So if you love Deadpool, if you like Harley Quinn, those kind of things, then this will definitely be right up your alley. From my understanding, Domino is selling extremely well at many different shops, so there's definitely an audience for this. But for me, it just didn't quite click. And I'll probably give this one another issue, but I don't see myself reading it in the long run. Again, sadly, this is going to be another 3 out of 5. Another Marvel book that I read was Exiles number 1. This is Saladin Ahmed writing. Javier Rodriguez on pencils, Alvaro Lopez on inks, and Jordi Belair on colors. And I tried not to psych myself up completely on this particular book, but I do love Blink, my number two favorite mutant. I love her in anything that she shows up in. Saladin Ahmed is a fantastic writer. I love what he did over at Black Bolt. And I have big expectations for this book. But this first issue did have a lot of exposition. And it kind of made the story read a little slower than I wanted to at points. Because there's a lot of fun stuff happening. There's a lot of action going on. But some of that action gets muddled as I try to read all the panels, and there's a ton of word balloons in every single page. And for me, that doesn't quite jive with the type of story that the art is telling, and that put me off a little bit. But the story is very interesting, and we do see the Unseen, who is Nick Fury, as he was trapped on the moon by the Watchers. He's the one that opens up the book, and he kind of foretells about this this reality-consuming entity called the Time Eater. And so Blink is sent out through different realities to try to put a team together to stop the Time Eater. And that was really interesting seeing Nick Fury that way. I think I missed all that Unseen stuff. I don't know if it happened before this. I'm assuming it did. Nick Fury's been gone for a while. But it was cool to see that. I like the way that Blink is represented in this issue. She is very fun. She's very excited to do all this time hopping, except her abilities have changed a little bit because the device that allows her to travel through the realities is kind of malfunctioning. And we do see her show up to different realities. She shows up to one that it's very post-apocalyptic. It's definitely in the future. Kamala Khan is there, except she's no longer Miss Marvel. She just wants to be called Khan. And she looks like she's got to be, I would say, maybe in her 40s or 50s. She's got a lot of gray hair. And she's part of this group. It almost looks like the Morlocks that lived in the sewers. They don't have a particular faction. I guess they're their own faction because they're after her because she's a mutant. She's like, well, did the Inhumans send you to try to stop us? Like, there's obviously a lot going on in this universe. And we don't learn any of that. And I wish we would have, because that world seemed really interesting. But the device that Blink has malfunctions again, and she grabs Kamala Khan, and they shoot into another reality, where they meet Iron Lad, Nate Richards. And, of course, that was one of my favorite parts of the book, because we do get to see Khan the Conqueror, who I've been really digging a lot into lately, picking up old issues from a ton of different Marvel books just to see appearances of Khan the Conqueror. And as the issue ends, we see this mysterious Time Eater entity that the Unseen discussed at the beginning of the issue. And it's Galactus's head. And he's obviously been through some seriously bad times because the head is all busted up and there's no body. It's just the head. And that was really interesting because if Galactus dies, like, how does that change that particular entity, right? He's like a force of the universe, going around eating planets. And now that he has seen death, like, does he become more than just a world eater? Obviously he does. He's a reality eater now. So I look forward to seeing where this ends up. I was very excited to start. As I was reading it, I was a little less excited to continue. But the way that the issue ended, I think I'm in at least for another couple of issues, just to see what the story of the Time Eater is. And we haven't met the whole team yet. There's still a few other people. But yeah, overall, pretty good. I'm not sure how well this will relate to longtime comic readers. But this might be another fun one for new readers as well. So that's Exiles number 1 from Marvel Comics. I'll go ahead and give this one, we'll go middle ground with a 3.5 out of 5. Finally, I want to talk about two books from this week. The first one is Crude number 1. This is another Image number 1. Man, I've read a lot of Image lately. Crazy. Matter of fact, both of these last two will be Image titles. This is Crude number 1, written by Steve Orlando, whose work on Midnighter I absolutely adored. Midnighter is one of my favorite characters ever, so it's great to see Steve Orlando doing some creator-owned work. The art is Gary Brown, who does incredible work for Baby Teeth over at Aftershock. Colors is Lee Lefridge, we're going to assume. Letters by Thomas Maurer. And this is very much one of those type of stories that I generally don't like, but I think the way that Orlando goes through the paces here is really interesting, because this is very much one of those slice-of-life stories. But it's also much more than that. I think there's a lot of interesting, like, crime noir elements in this book that make it seem a little more up my alley. And we do see a lot of slice-of-life stuff in here, though. There's a lot of flashbacks to the main character and his son, and his whole family, really, how they grow up, how the father's job situation impacts the rest of the family. And from what I got out of this, he's kind of like a secret agent, but his family doesn't know that, right? It's like one of those typical, like, 50s, like, spy stories, right? Or like the dad pretends to be an insurance car salesman or something like that, but really he works for like the CIA. And this story is set in Russia, so there's a lot of interesting tidbits about Russian society and Russian culture, which I'm not entirely familiar with. But it was well done overall. As it turns out, there was some kind of falling out over the years, and the son and the father had a don't talk anymore. But they come upon each other sometime in the future, and the son's like, I'm going to go work at the refinery. And the father, of course, doesn't want him to do that, because it seems like maybe he worked for the company that runs the refinery as some kind of agent. And that night, the son gets killed. And the father goes to find out what's going on and decides to take revenge. And so he goes to take a job at the refinery, mostly to find out who killed his son and why. Really interesting dynamics on family. There's a really cool letter from Steve Orlando at the end of the issue in which he talks about the inspiration for the book and how this was kind of a way for him to express his anger with certain things, to talk about how society deals with some of the particular family elements that he's had to grown up with. And I think once I read that letter, the story felt a lot more personable to me, and it definitely increased the score a little bit. So still early on for Crude. I do have high hopes. Like I said, I love Steve Orlando on Midnighter. Some of his other stuff I was kind of so-so on, but because this is a creator-owned book, I think allowing him ultimate expression will make this one a really interesting series to follow. So again, that's Crude number 1 from Image Comics. I'm going to go ahead and give this one a 4 out of 5. Top book of the week, though, or top of the pile, is going to be The Dead Hand, issue number 1. This is Kyle Higgins writing, Stephen Mooney on art, Jordi Belair on colors, Clayton Cowles on letters, and this is another Image comic. Jesus Christ. This one's really, really awesome, though. When we kick off the story, we get to meet our main character, and he's very much like a Captain America analog, I would say. Maybe even a little bit darker. Maybe almost like a Winter Soldier type. And the outfit definitely seems that way. He's got this military uniform on, except there's an outline of a star on his chest, and he wears almost a full face mask, and there's also an outline of a star on there. And it takes place during the fall of the Soviet Union. So some more Russia stuff here going on at Image. And it starts off at the fall of the Soviet Union in 91, where this character is going to this factory in Russia to try to get all these secret weapons that supposedly Russia is working on. And when he gets there, he finds that there are no weapons. They're making like vacuum cleaners and like TV tubes and refrigerators and all kinds of weird stuff. And there's no tech there. There's a couple scientists there who did a lot of stuff for Russia during the Cold War, but they've kind of just been abandoned there. They have no food. There's no security there. And of course, he kind of feels bad. He throws him some food and decides, you know, hey, we're going to get the hell out of here. Assumingly, he's going to bring him back to the U.S. to try to extract some of these secret technologies that the Russians were working on during the Soviet Cold War era. After that, we do get to learn quite a bit about this guy. His name is Charlie. We get to learn a lot about Charlie, his childhood, his relationship with his sister, how the death of his father very early on led him into this journey to join the service. And he was obviously very much inspired by superheroes. There's like a Batman and Robin analog on the TV that he's watching. There's mention, of course, of Captain America, which makes total sense. And so as we learn in a few panels how he goes from a young child playing superhero with his sister to being this secret agent for the United States. And there's some insanely awesome looking pages in this book as those flashbacks are told. And I really dug that. We get to meet some characters which I assume will play key role as we move forward. One is Vil, who used to be a secret agent for Russia, and then he joined this group that Charlie's part of in the U.S., and then eventually he defected back to the Soviet Russia. And really well done. Cool story. I love how we learn so much about this character and this world that we're in just a few pages, because, I mean, most of that takes place, I'd say, in the first half of the book. The second half of the book changes pace quite a little bit, and we see Charlie as a cop in this little, like, it looks like a Midwestern, tiny American city, surrounded by mountains. Everyone's, like, super friendly. There's, like, you know, the town market, and just like a local cop. There's rebellious teenagers in this issue, and he talks to them a little bit, and they try to get him to go shooting, do it like a shooting contest. He's like, nah, like, I'll catch you guys later. I'm not down for that. And as all this is happening, we see a hiker going through the mountains who finds this place. It's called Mountain View. And he's walking through the city. He shows up to the bar where Charlie and some other people in the city are at. They're just kind of hanging out talking about these rowdy teenagers. And when he pops in, they give him some water. They're like, how'd you find this place? And as it turns out, this guy is a journalist, and he's been looking for this Mountain View place, and he is investigating the Dead Hand, which was this, it sounded like some kind of secret society or project during Soviet Russia. And once we learn about this, things get a little crazy. Charlie snaps the journalist's neck, and as all this is happening, one of the teenagers that Charlie was talking to earlier in the issue sees everything through a window in the back room of the saloon, and she runs off. And as we pan out from her running off, there's a few panels where you get further and further out, and then the final one, we see train tracks. There's no roads going into this place, just train tracks. And then that leads to the final page, where it turns out that we see that Mountain View is not in the U.S., it's actually Soviet Russia. That was awesome. I love how that changed everything for the story, right? Because we don't know when this is happening, the second part of the story is happening. But it's very obvious that whatever the Dead Hand is, the U.S. and Charlie and his team are very much still investigating this whole thing. And so they've set up this fake town in Russia, maybe to try to get more secrets out of Russia, or maybe it's all kind of part of the plan. And I wonder if after the events of the first half of the book, when he showed up at this factory, this vacuum cleaner factory, if maybe Charlie didn't also defect to the U.S. So we'll see. There's so many different places that this story can go, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a fantastic read. And for me, this book came out of nowhere. I didn't even know it was coming out till Wednesday. So if you get a chance, if you love these spy thriller kind of stories, definitely pick up The Dead Hand number 1 from Image Comics. It was really fantastic. It hit me in a special place. That's going to be a 5 out of 5 for me. And that's going to be it for this episode of Top of the Pile. Thanks for listening to Comic Talk Today. Of course, you can find me at GeekVine on Twitter. ComicTalkToday@gmail.com is the email address. No episode tomorrow, but I'll be back Monday with a new rant. Have a good weekend.